Well, that's a hard act to follow, but I'd like to share with you a little bit, if you will, of the future for a therapy that we are still in preclinical stages of developing, but we are hopeful that we are starting to get to the beginning of the end of that first phase of development, and our goal is to move on to clinical trials soon. This is work that I've done at the Center for Gene Therapy at Nationwide Children's Hospital. And let's see if I can use the pointer here. Can you see the arrow? So this approach is a surrogate therapy approach. So the idea here is to develop a gene that all patients naturally make and overexpress it in a place in the muscle where it normally is not expressed stimulate the expression of a functional group of proteins that can compensate for the loss of dystrophin in muscular dystrophy. And the way we do this is by overexpressing this gene here called GalNAc transferase, which the gene name for is GalGT2. And this is a glycosyl transferase that exists down here in the Golgi apparatus. And it puts on a particular sugar onto proteins that are in the membrane. And so the sugars, or carbohydrates, or saccharides, or glycans, these are all terms that are used fairly interchangeably, are put onto proteins that are in the membrane or secreted in all cells. And they can change the properties of those proteins. They can change the adhesion of those proteins to other proteins. And those aspects then can be manipulated through gene therapies. So there's a little podcast that I have just done that explains this in a little more detail. I don't know if you're anything like me. I sort of lose focus after noon. So here at 4 o'clock, you may not be able to follow all of this. So if you go to the Wellstone Muscular Dystrophy Center website for Nationwide Children's Hospital, we have a variety of little podcasts, which are 20-minute interviews with leaders in the field, discussing, hopefully oriented towards patients and parents to sort of break down and simplify and explain a number of different aspects of research in the field. And so these are great resources to go to if you want to learn more about any number of things like exon skipping, gene therapy, and so on. So the idea here is pretty simple. The dystrophin glycoprotein complex, when missing any aspect of it, from dystrophin, the sarcoglycans, the glycosylation of dystroglycan, or laminin in the extracellular matrix, leads to a defect in the muscle membrane that allows the muscle to become damaged as it's contracting. And in red here, I've listed all the human diseases that occur as a result of these sorts of genetic defects. And these little glycans here on alpha-dystroglycan, which is half carbohydrate by molecular weight, so half of the mass of this protein are these sugars that I showed you in the cartoon, are essential for the interaction of the extracellular matrix with the membrane. So I got interested in this field completely through a separate line of inquiry, which was to understand the development of the neuromuscular junction. So the neuromuscular junction is the very small part of the muscle that is contacted by the motor nerve and allows electrical impulses from the nervous system to cause the muscle to twitch. And if you look at a muscle cell, it's a very long, sort of elegant cylindrical cell, and the motor nerve touches it in a very, very small spot. So it comprises about 0.1% of the total membrane of the muscle cell. Yet in that little 1.1%, there's a unique set of proteins that are very much like the dystrophin glycoprotein complex, which I think most of you have heard of before, which include proteins like utrophin and synaptic forms of laminin and other extracellular matrix proteins. And so these sort of serve the same function. Utrophin is about 85% identical, not similar in amino acid to dystrophin. It binds F-actin, it binds dystroglycan. It really sort of serves the same sorts of functions, and I think John Tinsley tomorrow is going to talk to you about utrophin as a therapy. We got interested in this because GalGT2 is a gene that makes this enzyme that's also localized at the neuromuscular junction, where it puts this additional sugar, which is a beta-1-4 GalNAc linkage in this red here, onto alpha-dystroglycan. And so the idea here is that this sugar then participates in this unique set of proteins at the neuromuscular junction. So you really have two complexes in muscle. You have the dystrophin glycoprotein complex, which is everywhere, and then you have the utrophin glycoprotein complex, which is in these very small little pockets of the muscle. And what we found when we overexpressed GalGT2, and we actually had no idea that we would be studying muscular dystrophy when we started doing these experiments, was that when we overexpressed this gene in skeletal muscles, that we induced the ectopic overexpression of this entire synaptic glycoprotein complex. So utrophin, synaptic laminins, all of these proteins now were expressed everywhere along the muscle membrane. So that led to a pretty obvious experiment, which was if we were to take the MDX mouse, which lacks dystrophin, so it's missing the dystrophin protein here, and cross that to these transgenic mice where this complex was everywhere, would we get functional compensation by this set of proteins that we had manipulated through this one gene that controls glycosylation? And the answer to that question was yes, and I'll show you a little bit of data that suggests that sort of effect is really almost absolute for the entire lifespan of the mouse. So these transgenic MDX mice really do not develop signs of disease. And one of the other real benefits of this approach to therapy, because it's a surrogate gene therapy that controls a whole complex of proteins, is that it can affect deficits in all the different parts of the complex. So laminin deficiency is therapeutically benefited by GalGT2 overexpression. Alpha-sarcoglycan deficiency is benefited by overexpression of this gene. And so this movement of the whole complex of proteins is able to target more than one form of the disease. So this is just an example of the kind of result you can get. So here's a serum creatine kinase assay. And in NDX mice, just as in boys with Duchenne, you get about an order of magnitude elevation in this. This is an enzyme in the muscle cell that when the membrane is perforated or broken in some way, releases its contents, the muscle releases its contents out into the serum. And in these transgenic MDX mice, shown by these black arrows here, at all different ages, you really don't see any elevation in serum CK in the animals beyond what you would see in a wild-type mouse. Likewise, when we assay for damage of muscle cells within the muscle, we see no damage. And so I'll just explain this very quickly. Muscle cells, when they're damaged, undergo a necrosis, and ultimately this stimulates a regenerative process where satellite cells, which were mentioned earlier, divide and fill up that muscle space and ultimately make a new muscle. And in dystrophic mice, the nuclei within those new muscles remain in the center of the muscle tissue. And so it becomes a nice way to assay sort of an indelible marker of a cycle of degeneration and regeneration. So again, here's a natural history study in the mice up to 18 months of age, and each one of these points is a different muscle. And they're not labeled because it just gets too busy, but the point is that by 6 months of age, MDX mice, about 9 out of 10 muscle cells within the muscle have undergone one of these cycles of degeneration and regeneration. And in the transgenic mice, we really see no evidence for that, even out to 18 months of age. Now, you may say 18 months isn't that long a time, but for a mouse, it is a long amount of time. Mice live about 24 months. So by this point, the mice are really the equivalent of a sort of a 60-year-old human being. And similarly with walk tests, we see a profound improvement as a result of overexpression of this gene. So this is an experiment in a sarcoglycan-deficient mouse, and this is our version for the mouse of the 6-minute walk test. We actually do a 10-minute walk test for 600 seconds. And the normal mice walk for that entire time on the treadmill. The alpha-sarcoglycan-deficient mice lose about 90% of their walking ability at this age. and then the transgenic mice recover almost all of that walking ability. So this is sort of the best case scenario for what this gene can do in these different rodent models of these diseases. And so the question is, how can we translate that into a therapy in the clinic? So one of the things we can do to assay that is to figure out how much resistance to injury we can protect the muscles. We can protect the muscles from injury with the gene therapy. And so I'm just going to forward through this so that I catch up on time here. So this is just one example of this kind of experiment, and this is what's called an eccentric contraction-induced injury experiment, where we take a muscle out of the animal. And this is a paradigm that's sort of equivalent to walking downstairs, where we stretch the muscle slightly beyond its maximal ability to withstand force and excite it while we're doing that. And when you do that repeatedly, the muscle loses its ability it loses its force. And so this is a percentage of the force that it loses over time. And this is a mock-treated MDX muscle, and this is a Galgt2-treated MDX muscle. And I like this experiment because it basically shows that in this therapy, we got a doubling of the force that the muscle could withstand. And this was the case even though we only transfused 20% of the muscle tissue. And so what that tells us is that even when we give a very low dose, we can get a very potent response to this treatment. And in the best-case scenario, we get absolute recovery of the muscle. So this is an example of 100% of the muscles expressing the gene. And here, these are dystrophin-deficient muscles, and this is the amount of force they lose over time compared to the muscles that don't have the gene. So, again, you have loss of 95% of the force versus maybe 5% here. In addition, we found that overexpression of this gene, which leads to the glycosylation of alpha-dystroglycan, increases the affinity of extracellular matrix proteins to bind to alpha-dystroglycan in biochemical experiments. I'm not going to take you through those because they're sort of boring and sort of gory in terms of the details. But the bottom line is that this sugar, which is a single sugar that we put onto dystroglycan, increases the ability of agrins and all laminins in the muscle extracellular matrix to bind to this protein in the membrane. And so the idea here is that we're increasing the glue of the muscle membrane. It's sort of like going from having a bottle of Elmer's glue to having a bottle of super glue. You're really increasing the ability of the muscle cell to stick to the protein that's around the muscle cell. And in doing so, that's preventing the muscle cell from breaking. So in the Center for Gene Therapy, we have developed a number of approaches to deliver these genes to muscle. And this is technology that our lab didn't really develop, but we've borrowed from others. The strategy that we've used is to use adeno-associated virus to package our gene into a little 20-nanometer protein particle. And these particles are able, because of the serotype that we're using, to be delivered via the blood and to perfuse the entire tissue. And so the goal here, long-term, is to develop single therapies that one could give via the blood to perfuse all of the muscle cells in the body. But short of that, we've taken some steps to perfuse entire individual muscles. And this is an example here of a collaborative work that I've done with all of the members of our Center for Gene Therapy to perfuse the gastrocnemius muscle, for example, of a rhesus macaque. And we can get very, very high percentages of these myofibers, these muscle cells, expressing any gene that we put in here. Now, you may be saying to yourself, why on earth would you want to give a virus to a young boy? And these really aren't viruses. These are protein delivery devices. What we've done is we've taken out all of the viral gene sequences except for 200 base pairs that allow those genes to stick to the protein, And then we've put the natural human gene back in its place. So these are not infectious particles. These are merely gene delivery tools that we're using. And we can get very, very high levels of expression, basically in large muscles in large animals with this. So here's just one example of perfusing an entire gastrocnemius muscle via the femoral artery. Each one of these blocks is taken out of the muscle and assayed individually in an unbiased way for gene expression, and all of these little green circles show you the amount of gene expression that's functional in terms of the glycosylation that we're getting. And it's, you know, we're getting to the point now where we can do this for entire limbs, and that is ultimately our goal for the clinical trial, would be to perfuse bilaterally the entire legs of patients bring these genes into the muscle to prevent injury. So this is an example of the quadriceps, where we can show 70% of all of the cells in all four heads of the quadriceps muscle from a single treatment overexpressing various genes. This is GFP. These red circles here are alpha sarcoglycan. And with Louise Chiquan's help and Louise Rodino-Klapak, we've moved now to doing entire limb perfusion, and that'll be our goal for this for the clinical trial. So we have gotten to the point now, actually just today, where we have injected all of the animals we are planning to do for preclinical toxicology studies. And that work was all funded by a U54 grant that was given to Dr. Mendel and I by the NIH. And the hope is that within 6 months, which is the end of that study, we will have all of the data that we need to file an investigational new drug application with the FDA. We've met with the FDA with a pre-IND meeting last fall before we did these studies and got guidance from them on what they would want in those safety studies. And that all went very well. And so our goal then is to complete that part of the process early next year. Then, of course, we have several other major hurdles in terms of funding to get to the clinical trial. And Kevin Flanagan, who's a clinician scientist in our center, will talk to you, I'm sure, in the near future about those issues. So this is a new idea for therapy and a new therapy that's in development in our center, one of six that we're actually developing right now for various rare diseases which we're trying to move towards the clinic. So thank you for your attention.